Hare Krishna. So we are starting on 27th of December 2013, day 5 of Bhakti Shastri by His Grace Vamshi Vadan Prabhu on Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, second session of the day. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Maybe you ask the question at the end of this. Hare Krishna. Okay. So do we have everyone's attention here, please? Okay, so now the next one is regarding the moon and faith on scientific advancements and so on. Regarding landing on the moon, so when the episode was taking place, the Prabhupada was watching on the television what was being shown, and who's the one who asked it? You had asked one. Okay. So he was watching, and Prabhupada just dismissed it. He said it's a hoax. They never went to the moon. And there were some devotees who were telling, but they're showing it. It's pratyaksha praman, you can see it. Huh? No, there was Prabhupada's one of secretaries called Purushottam. Yeah. So he actually failed to believe Prabhupada. But Prabhupada, right from the beginning, he never accepted it. He never accepted it. And Prabhupada writes it in quite a few places in the Bhagavatam purports as well. And later on, actually the scientists themselves came up with evidences to actually show that they never went on the moon. The scientists themselves came up with evidence. So Prabhupada had full faith in the Shastra than on the scientists. And his faith at no point of time was shaken with whatever the scientists did. And so Prabhupada had full faith on the Shastric statement that without qualification one cannot go to the moon, which is a higher heavenly planet. One needs qualification. Without qualification, simply by the use of some mechanistic devices, satellites or whatever, one cannot go. And Prabhupada was fixed in that. So he had full faith in the Shastra and his faith was unshakable. Right, that's the Uttam Adhikari. The faith is unshakable in any circumstance. The whole world was accepting. The whole world was accepting that the man has finally landed on the moon. Most probably Srila Prabhupada was the only one sitting an 80-year-old man sitting in a corner somewhere, but totally fixed in the fact that no, they didn't go. And Prabhupada emphatically proclaimed this. Right. And later, the scientists themselves, they understood that it was actually a hoax. Right. So therefore, the important point is that our faith has to be based on Shastra. And whether the Shastric truth, if they happen to collaborate with the scientific theories and their findings, then it's fine. If they don't, we don't change the Shastra to suit what they are saying. The Shastric truths are eternal, non-changeable, unchangeable. And so we should have full faith in what the Shastra is saying. And whether we understand, whether we don't understand, that's another thing. But the fact remains that the Shastra is perfect because it's coming from the perfect source, Krishna, who is free from the four defects.
And so that's
the point. Is that okay? We don't want to go into the details of that because, you know, then there are so many points refuting whatever they saw and whatever they didn't see and things like that. So Prabhupada said, you know, it's a picture of some desert. They took pictures somewhere and they're showing it as if it's the moon, so that they make money, right? So we don't get bewildered by these things. We accept Shastra, we accept what Srila Prabhupada is saying. So that, is that answer your question also regarding science, right? It's the same thing. Yes?
Prabhupada already said that the Prabhupada quote is something in the verse that what the scientists believe is the moon, say hypothetically they did that on some matter, some rock, isn't actually what we proclaim the moon to be.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's what Prabhupada said. They never went on the moon.
Okay, Prabhupada.
That's exactly what Prabhupada said.
Okay.
They never went on the moon.
Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. Okay, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay.
So my uncle, my mother's sister's husband, is a big NASA scientist.
Uh-huh.
And played a major role in the so-called moon landing.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has a big house in Maryland, the fat cat, you know, very wealthy. And when I go to family gatherings, I don't know what to say.
Mm.
You know, should I bring it up or should I just be quiet?
Off the top. Depends on you, what's your relationship and what you want to do. Yeah, why, as they say, stir a hornet's nest.
Well, I just had a question. Something we discussed with Kandana Swami, where Prabhupada has made scientific statements in his books that are not always accurate. I mean, just outright, the human brain, the man's brain is 64 ounces, the woman's brain is 32 ounces, he's basing it on a scientist of his time. So in that situation, Prabhupada wasn't basing his statements on Shastra. And so, I mean, he was wrong. The brain does not weigh that much. But that doesn't shake my faith in Prabhupada, because it doesn't shake my faith. It just doesn't work like that. He's basing it off scientific knowledge. They were wrong. I mean, if there was something like, there was something different. So like, even if people did land on the moon, that's just my personal position. If they did land on the moon, it wouldn't shake my faith in Prabhupada. Because that's just me.
Good. Good. It's very nice that your faith in Prabhupada is unshakable.
From Shastra, maybe some of the devotees can answer. Maybe Eklava can answer. You can answer. Is that big white thing that we see in the sky actually the moon referred to in Shastra? Because my Uncle Bob built the radar system that tracked all 23 Apollo missions to the moon. And I've had hundreds of hours with Uncle Bob about how he tracked them there and back. And it's very perplexing what that big white thing in the sky is, because I keep telling my Uncle Bob, I don't think that's the moon that I'm talking about. Is that the moon? Or does Shastra actually have something further away that's actually the moon? I'm not sure that's the moon.
I think the Prabhupada called that the moon.
He called that the moon?
That's
the moon?
Yeah. And he spoke about how the moon has different phases.
Yeah.
And he gave the analogy to the phases of the moon. This is just like how the... So this is, of course, an analogy which is there in the Avadhuta Brahman section 11 canto, which describes how Just like the moon by itself doesn't change. The moon remains the same, but it's only because of you know, the light that is reflected from the moon that shows different phases. So similarly, it's only the body which is changing, the soul remains the same. So as Prabhupada gave these different analogies and things like that, I think it was referring to the moon that we see.
Moon and the sun.
Yeah, the moon and the sun. Who has had something to say?
Uncle Bob.
May you come forward?
Just understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's
been somewhat
on the Rahu planet.
Yeah, Prabhupada did say that. Yes, they never went on the moon, they went on the Rahu planet. Yeah, that's true. So they went somewhere other than the moon, wherever that could be. Okay, fine. Next. Who has this question? Okay, regarding difficulties, discoveries, yes. Difficulties in life are a test of faith. So faith is tested when there are difficulties. That's true. That's Krishna's test. So how we pass the test is whether our faith remains unshakable or it shakes. So when we understand that, yes, difficulties are ultimately Krishna's mercy, and that's what Shastra is again and again repeatedly saying, as we often quote the famous Brahma's prayer, what's that? Satyenu kampam susumikshamanam bunjana ematma krutam vipakam ridvanga pubhi vidudan namaste jiveta yo mukti padesudhayamakam. So, and Prabhupada writes, that is the stance of a devotee in Krishna consciousness. So, when we understand that yes, difficulties are coming, that is also Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada, quoting Vishnachakrithampur, he gives an example that just like there's a father. The father may sometimes give a sweet to the child and sometimes may slap the child. But both are for his benefit. And the child, if he understands that, then he continues to love his father. So similarly, Krishna also, like a loving father, sometimes things go fine, but sometimes Krishna wants to purify us so that we become closer, we get closer to him. He wants to purify us. So that is also Krishna's mercy. So therefore, we have a philosophy, we understand these things, and that's the reason why we're studying philosophy, so that we are not bewildered in these. Okay. Now you should know the answer. Come on.
I understand, like, when we have to do a service, we have to have full confidence and be enthusiastic, because ultimately the result depends on Krishna. So in that sense, yeah, okay, I should, we can not be so fearful. But like, as you get more and more attached to trying to carry out the, and carrying out the order of the spiritual master, then that becomes your priority, So you almost become fearful, like, you know, when there's like social events, you're not so much inclined to go to them. It's like your fear. You have the fear to go now to so many like events that you used to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a fear. I guess it's a fear of becoming flat.
Okay, so that's a good fear. That's a healthy fear. So if one is, fearful of falling a prey to Maya, then that's a healthy fear and that's good. So if you're fearful of Maya, and Prabhupada said that my only complaint is that my devotees are not sufficiently afraid of Maya. So if you're fearful of Maya, that's good.
How do you distinguish what is Maya and what is not?
Whatever takes one away from Krishna is Maya. So if you're fearful of being bewildered, being influenced by Maya, by illusion, then that's good. Then we will remain on the safe side. So that's healthy for you. Right, so you're living up to your name. Okay. And as far as this is concerned, so depending upon what is our ashram, So then the attitudes vary. So in either case, as we study the other verse, dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi vartashiva. So the ultimate principle is that that whether we totally renounce sex enjoyments or we use it simply for procreation of Krishna conscious children, that is the right attitudes. So if one is in the renounced order, then one has nothing to do with the opposite sex, save and except service. And if one is in the householder life, then the only purpose is procreation of Krishna conscious children. And so if one is following that principle, as Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, then one's faith will not be shaken. Hope that answers the question. Okay, fine. Okay.
Can I ask one more?
You want to add one more? Yeah. How
many?
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Sometimes when I was on Sankirtan and I was speaking with different people, like for example, I was speaking with a Christian, and he would say to me, you know, Christ is to the Lord and you all go to hell. Then I can speak with a Muslim and he would tell me a lot because when you all go to hell, the other Christian. And so all these people, if they're convinced that, that they are right, and this can be so.
As Prabhupada said that if one is Christian or one is a Muslim, if one follows their religion perfectly, then ultimately it can lead them to love of God. Right? So the important point is, are they following their religion strictly? That's the important point. And if they're not, then what the scriptures are offering is a very easy process, especially in this age of Kali Yuga, to attain that ultimate perfection of love of God. So if that is being that's available as in such an easy way, why not take it? Okay. And ultimately we can preach and we can try to convince someone, but ultimately it's always a matter of faith. And also it depends on what is their sukriti that they have. As we discussed the other day, that only when one has some certain level of sukriti, then one becomes qualified to take up to the practice of devotional service. So we can try our best, but ultimately we cannot change someone. Okay? So, yes, we preach to everyone, but there's no point in simply dry arguments. If somebody is receptive, then we continue. Otherwise, okay. Fine. You have something? Okay, last one.
Who called us?
What happened to them?
The devotees are in a position of responsibility and they fall into Maya and they renege their responsibilities and a movement appears to suffer and devotees suffer a lot. For example, when this Prabhu Harikesh Maharaj fell down, Harikesh Prabhu, and one out of six devotees in Europe was initiated by him in the temples. This all stood in Europe, but they're still recovering from that.
Okay, so that's one something we'll just speak. Okay. And you want to add to that?
No, I just want to go on the record as saying that I personally don't believe all religion is leading to God.
Oh, you're talking about that?
I don't believe that all major religions actually produce the results of getting to God.
Uh-huh. So,
I think it's politically popular to, and that it's been propagated for hundreds of years to say that Christianity and Islam and other major religions all lead to God. It's been very popular to say that because interfaith dialogue sort of demands that you have to be politically correct. I personally just want to say I don't believe that's true.
Okay. Whatever I said is based on what Prabhupada said. Yeah. So anyway, we don't want to go into further discussions on that. I think so. The topic has already been changed, so it's okay. Fine. It's okay.
But I can understand just if you go to God, but they are meat eaters. So what do we need? We don't eat meat. We eat meat.
Yeah, that's the point. That's the point Srila Prabhupada would often bring. Thou shalt not kill. He would bring that point to that. Okay, fine. Coming to this point. Okay, we'll check the progress. Okay, so regarding guru fall downs and things like that. So, I think the opposition to that should be that due to whatever reason, and each case had a different reason why somebody left the process of Krishna consciousness, and there could be multifactorial reasons, but at the same time I think so what we should try and understand is that our faith has to be fixed on the Shastric truths, and the Shastras are very well giving evidence and giving clear understanding of how anyone who follows the process of Krishna consciousness perfectly, that Krishna himself will personally deliver such a person. And that is the whole discussion of the ninth chapter. Right? And that is the reason why this ninth chapter is so very important, because by the study of this ninth chapter, our faith in the process of devotional service should really deepen. Because here we find in this chapter, Krishna personally is giving assurances as to how he himself protects the devotee. And so we have to have faith in this Shastra, in what Krishna himself is saying. And so therefore actually, as Prabhupada often said, the process of Krishna consciousness is scientific. Scientific means if one follows, it works. If one doesn't follow, it still works negatively. That is science. And so one senior sannyasi in a moment, when he was asked this question, a similar question, so he gave a very precise answer. He said, it actually shows that Krishna consciousness works. That means somebody does not follow, then the result is guaranteed. Right? And so so the lesson that we have to learn is not to commit the same mistake. And if we don't commit, then Krishna is giving assurances of the result. And as far as whatever unfortunate things have happened, what could we do? We are not in a position to help or change that situation of the past. But then, what we learn from history is that we don't commit the same mistakes again. I think so that's how we should view this. Fine, thank you. Hare Krishna, we are proceeding ahead. We had quite a good discussion on the third verse. Okay, now, from the fourth verse onwards, there is the next section. This is what we did. 4 to 10, this is your open book question. Okay? So if you listen attentively to our discussion, your question is answered. Okay? So it's Krishna's achintya bheda relationship with the material world. Okay? And it's a little tricky, but we will try our best to explain. Fourth verse. Let's recite. Maya kadam idam sarvam jagat avyaktamurtina matsani sarvabhutani navcham teshavastitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Krishna is saying, by me, in my unmanifested form, avyaktamurtina. What does it mean? Unmanifested form means what? Yes, through his energies, his unmanifested form refers to his energies. By my energies, I am manifest everywhere. Hare Krishna has his personal form and he has his energies which are distributed everywhere. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. What does that mean? Who's supervising whom? Here it says, all beings are in me, but I am not in them. Yes, Adi Krishna?
Just kind of validated. Is that universal form that is
possible? Not so complicated.
Krishna is pervading the whole creation in every atom.
Okay, he's not talking about atoms here, he's talking about beings. Yes,
but all beings are emanating from me.
All beings are emanating from me. Okay.
Krishna is of this world and not in this world.
Okay. Basically, it's quite simple. It basically means all beings are in me, means all beings are dependent on me. But I am not in them, I am not dependent on them. Nityo nityanam chitanas chitananam eko bahunam yo vidyati kaman. Right? Krishna is maintaining everyone else. Nobody maintains him. So all beings are in me means all beings are dependent on me, but I am not dependent on them. Right? That's basically what it means. And then In the second paragraph of his purport, Srila Prabhupada explains very beautifully. Yet one should not conclude that because he spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. This is the typical Mayavad theory. And the Mayavadis give an example to support this point. They say if you take a piece of paper and you tear it and you throw the pieces around. Right, just like in the morning Michael Crowe did that. Right, so if you throw the pieces around, Michael Drew, can you find that original piece of paper?
Yeah.
Can you find it?
The original one.
That's not what you get. You can't find the original one. So that means when Krishna is distributed throughout the creation through his energies, Krishna in his personal existence is lost. Krishna no more exists in his personal existence because he is distributed everywhere else. That's the Mayavad theory, and Prabhupada is refuting that. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. And he gives the example. For example, a king has a garment which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. Right? So, just like there's king, or now we have prime minister, president, whoever. So, he's not present everywhere. But yet, you know, there's the policeman at the traffic signal. He may be getting a few thousand rupees, but even a millionaire, when he comes in his car, what he has to do? If there's a red light, he has to stop. But he's a millionaire. The policeman is earning a few thousand rupees. Why does he stop? Yes, because that policeman represents the government. So that means he is embodying the energy of the prime minister. He is a representative of that energy of the prime minister. Right? So even though, but is the prime minister standing there at the red signal? No, obviously not. But still, he has power because he is representing him. Right. So, similarly, there is Krishna and his energies. His energies are pervading everywhere. But Krishna, he is still present. Just like the Prime Minister, he is still present. Okay? That, and Prabhupada writes, that is a crude example. Why does he say it's a crude example? Yes, Mike?
Is Prabhupada trying to say that you can't refute it? You can't...
Yeah, you surely can't refute it. That's correct. But why does he say it's a crude example? That means it's not exact. Yes, sure.
Crude means unrefined. So does it refer to the fact that it's a principle and not a detail?
Okay, so what's the principle and what's the detail?
So the detail is like, if we read into it, we can say, you know, we can get really technical and dissect it and potentially find a flaw in it. But the principle is that actually if one takes it at face value, it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. You're correct. I just want a little more explanation of that.
I'm just thinking that this is a material example, and it's hard to kind of use material things to explain something spiritual.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. That spiritual truths cannot be entirely explained through material examples. That's right, that's a principle. But how does it apply in this case?
The cosmic manifestation that Krishna has created is very vast and variegated, more than the scope of a simple government agency, chocolate cup.
Okay. Yeah, that's correct. And also, another good reason is this. Here, in the case of the king, or the prime minister, or president, or whoever, his control over that policeman is quite limited. Right? Or the king and his department. Here's the king or the prime minister sitting over there somewhere, and the policeman, you know, if he wants, he can do any nonsense. The prime minister is not in full control. But that is not the case with Krishna. Krishna is in full control, as Prabhupada will further explain. Not a blade of grass moves without the will of Krishna. So there's a difference. As Prabhupada rightly said, Anasarapra rightly said, that a material example will not explain a spiritual truth in totality, but it's what is best clothes that we can get. So that's the reason he says it's a crude example. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see in everything that exists, both in this material world and in the spiritual world, are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, fine. So this is one point. Okay, this is one point, that how Krishna is present throughout the creation through his different energies. Okay, that's one. Let's go to the fifth one. I will finish the discussion of mental questions. Natamattani bhutani pashyame yogamaishwaram bhuta vrennata bhutastho mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. And yet everything that's created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities and all that everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation. For myself is the very source of creation. Getting a little tricky, right? So here Krishna is saying, and yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. You know, I am the creator of everything, but yet, everything that's created does not rest in me. And Krishna is saying, Pashyame Yogam Aishwaram. Krishna is saying, this is my mystic opulence. Behold it. This is my opulence. This is my opulence. That though I am the creator of everything, all material worlds, all spiritual worlds, everything I am creating, yet it does not rest in me. Isn't it sort of bewildering? And Prabhupada explains it very beautifully. He says, the Lord says that everything is resting on Him. Matsthani sarva bhutani. This should not be misunderstood. The Lord is not directly concerned with the maintenance and sustenance of this material manifestation. Sometimes we see a picture of Atlas holding the globe on his shoulders. He seems to be very tired. Holding this great earthly planet. Such an image should not be entertained in connection with Krishna's upholding this created universe. He says that although everything is resting on him, he is aloof. The planetary systems are floating in space, and this space is the energy of the Supreme Lord. But he is different from space. He is differently situated. Therefore the Lord says, although they are situated on my inconceivable energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I am aloof from them. This is the inconceivable opulence of the Lord. Is it clear? What's inconceivable about it? What is this inconceivable opulence of the Lord? And why is it inconceivable? Somebody would like to summarize what is this inconceivable opulence? The Lord is saying, behold this inconceivable mystic opulence of mine. So what is that inconceivable opulence? Somebody like to explain. This is your open book answer. You have to understand this, otherwise you won't be able to write. Okay, yes, Adipur.
How Krishna is involved in every minute detail of the creation, as we often say that not even made of grass moves, but it doesn't mean that, like normal person, when he goes to a garden and does work, he gets his hand dirty and he gets contaminated. It's not the case with Krishna. He's involved, and at the same time, he is not contaminated and detached and aloof.
Yes, that's right. Krishna is in full control and yet he is aloof.
Hello.
It is inconceivable. Why is it inconceivable? Yes, Prabhu.
Well, because we don't have any experience of this in day-to-day life.
Exactly. Because there is no experience of this within material creation. Do you ever see someone who is in full control and yet he is totally aloof? How can someone be in full control and yet be aloof at the same time? Well, that's why Prabhupada said that king's example is also a crude example. So if you take that example of the king or the prime minister, then, well, he is in some control, but not full control. He may be sort of aloof, but the fact remains that he is not in full control. Right? And if somebody were to be in full control, that means, if the Prime Minister were to be in full control of the policeman, then what would have to be done? What would have to be done? If the Prime Minister were to be in full control of the policeman and the traffic signal, what would have to be done? Yes. The Prime Minister could not sit in his office. The Prime Minister would have to be there right next to the policeman to monitor him. He could not be aloof if he were to have full control. And if he is aloof, then he cannot have full control. But here we find a situation where Krishna is in full control, yet he is aloof. Krishna, what's Krishna doing most of the time? Not most of the time, all the time. What's he doing? Yes, exactly. That's what he's doing. And as he's playing on his flute, he's not thinking, that material universe there is one, that devotee there, maybe he's going into Maya, what's happening? And he's very disturbed. And the gopis are thinking, what's happening to Krishna? Do you hear of this? Krishna is just playing on his flute. And he's least bothered of what's happening in the material universes. And yet, there is full control. This is what is inconceivable. How somebody can be in full control, yet totally aloof. This is what is the inconceivable mystic opulence of the Lord. And Krishna is telling Arjuna, behold, Pashyame Yoga Maishwaram, behold my mystic opulence. This is my mystic opulence. I'm in full control. I'm the creator. I'm the sustainer. I'm the destroyer. I'm in full control. Yet, I'm totally aloof. This is the mystic opulence. And to explain this, Krishna is giving an example. What's the example? Sixth verse. Yata kasha sito nityam vayu sarvatra gomaha tada sarvani bhutani matthani upadharaya. Understand? That as a mighty wind blowing everywhere, rests always in the sky. All created beings rest in me. Okay, you can read the purport, please.
For the ordinary person, it is almost inconceivable how the huge material creation is resting in him. But the Lord is giving an example which may help us to understand. The sky may be the biggest manifestation we can conceive. And in that sky, the wind or air is the biggest manifestation in the cosmic world. The movement of the air influences the movement of everything. But although the wind is great, it is still situated within the sky. The wind is not beyond the sky. Similarly, all the wonderful cosmic manifestations are existing by the supreme will of God. And all of them are subordinate to that supreme will. As we generally say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, everything is moving under His will. By His will, everything is being created, everything is being maintained, and everything is being annihilated. Still, He is aloof from everything, as the sky is always aloof from the activities of the wind.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so this is the example that Krishna is giving of the sky and the wind that's blowing within the sky. So there is a sky and the wind is blowing. So the wind is limited by the sky. The wind cannot go beyond the sky, right? It can blow only within that sky. But wind is free to move within the sky. At the same time, is the sky affected by the wind? Suppose the wind carries a bad odor. Is it that the wind becomes contaminated by the bad odor and, you know, next day everyone is thinking, oh, the sky seems to be smelling bad today. Does it happen? No. The sky is never influenced by the wind. Though the wind is only able to move under the sky. It cannot go beyond the sky. That means the sky has some control over the wind, but the sky is never influenced by the wind. Similarly, the Lord, He is in full control, right? He is in control. The living entities, material nature, everything has to work within His domain. Cannot go beyond that. Everything is within His control. But at the same time, the Lord is not influenced by the living entities, not influenced by material nature. He is aloof. Is that clear? That's why Krishna is giving the example to explain this point. So now the question arises, okay, now the concept is clear? But even after explaining this, giving this example, Krishna still says, this is my inconceivable potency. See, if something is inconceivable, after it has been explained, it has to become conceivable, right? Understandable. But Krishna is still saying it's inconceivable. Even after He gave His own example, Krishna still says it is still inconceivable. Why?
An example of Dr. Frog.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Frog, he's living in a well, and his friend comes and visits him and says, my dear Dr. Frog, I just come from the ocean. And Dr. Frog says, oh, how big is the ocean? Is it as big as my well? And his friend says, no, no, much, much bigger than the well. So Dr. Frog says, is it twice as big? And the friend says, no, the ocean is much bigger, much bigger. Is it three times as big? No, no, much bigger. Four times as big? No, no, much bigger, much bigger. So this way we can understand, because we have no reference point being in the material world, that these spiritual concepts are achintya, they're inconceivable to us.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. Then yes, I think the volume can be slightly increased.
Maybe the volume.
No, the volume. There. Okay, so yes, that's true, that spiritual concepts are, yes, not totally understandable with material examples, but still remains inconceivable. Why? Another reason, and I would like to read this directly from Vishnachara Thakur. I'll come back to that. That's a good slide for your answer. Okay, somebody can read this, please. You agree? Read quick.
Though the living beings are in me, who remain detached and independent, they are not in me. And though I am in them, I am not in them. An example is given in this first tulip to illustrate. The wind remains always situated in the ether, which has the nature of being detached. The wind has the nature of being restless, going everywhere, sarvatraha, and is great in size, mahan. Because of the detachment of the ether, the wind is situated in it, but not situated in it. The ether, though in the wind, is not in the wind because of detachment. Similarly, all things such as ether, which are great in dimension and are moving everywhere, are situated in me, but are not situated in me. Since I also have the nature of detachment,
sorry,
please consider and accept this fact.
Okay, go ahead.
But you have said that your powers are inconceivable. Pashyam me yogam aishwaram. How then can those powers remain inconceivable? They are just like common ether and wind. This is explained as follows. Ether has detachment because it is unconscious by its very nature. Among conscious beings, however, detachment doesn't exist anywhere except in the Lord, even though He is at once contains everything and dwells in everything. This fact establishes the inconceivability of the Lord. In any case, this example comparing ether to the Lord is given for the understanding of the common man.
You see, this is a significant point here. You see here, this example, where is the pen? Okay, the pen. This example of the sky and the wind. Okay? So there is a sky and there is a wind that's blowing within the sky. And what is being said is that yes, the Lord is like the sky. The wind cannot blow outside this, so the Lord is in control. But at the same time, He is not affected. Just that the sky is not affected by the wind, the Lord is not affected by the material nature, by the living entities and so on. And the Lord remains detached from this. Right? That's what is being said. But now what Vishnu is explaining is, this is easy to understand because both the sky as well as the wind are insentient, unconscious. But this does not exist among conscious living entities in the material world. Among conscious beings, however, detachment does not exist anywhere except in the Lord. Suppose a man creates a small house, and with that he has his family. What happens? What happens? Immediately there's intense attachment. Or we create some projects, even within devotional circles. We create some projects. What happens? There's intense attachment. But here, there is a Lord who is the creator of the whole creation, the whole universe, the whole material existence, the Lord has created. And yet, He is detached. Think of it. You know, we create some small things and we get so attached. Here the Lord is the creator, the sustainer, the maintainer, the destroyer of this entire material existence. And yet, the Lord is aloof. Lord is not worrying about it. He's playing his flute there. Can you think of such a personality within this material world? Well, a pure devotee, yes, possible. Because he has all the qualities of the Lord. But other than that, you don't find. Therefore, Krishna is saying this is inconceivable. Because such a concept does not exist within the material creation. Somebody who is the creator, the maintainer, the destroyer, he's in full control and yet so aloof, yet so detached. You don't find this. That's why, even though the example is given, as Anasya Prabhu rightly pointed out, the material example can only come somewhat close to the spiritual truth, but can never explain the spiritual truth in totality. And so therefore, the material example is okay because these two are insentient, but it doesn't totally explain the facts that how the Lord was in full control is so detached. That it still remains inconceivable. Therefore, even though the Lord gave the example, but still it remains inconceivable. And that's what he's explaining. Among conscious beings, our detachment does not exist anywhere except in the Lord, even though he at once contains everything and dwells in everything. Okay, so this fact establishes the inconceivability of the Lord. Is this point clear? And to understand this, Prabhupada gives another example in the next verse. Okay, we'll just finish this section and then we will take questions, okay? The seventh verse says, O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. That's how the Lord is in full control. By His potency, there's creation, there's annihilation, everything is taking place. And eighth verse, he says, Prakritam Swam Avashtabhya Visrujami Puna Puna Bhutagramam Imam Krishnam Avasham Prakritir Vashat. So the whole cosmic order is under me, Krishna is saying. It's under me. I am in full control. Under my will. It is automatically manifested again and again. And under my will, it is annihilated at the end. So Krishna is fully establishing that how he is in full control. Just because he's aloof, playing on his flute, it does not mean there is some chaos taking place. Right. Just like we see when King Anga, he went to the forest. There was chaos. There was no king. And when there was no king, there was chaos. Right? And they were wondering, there's this King Vena, his son, he's a rogue. What to do? They thought, you know, better to have a rogue as a king. At least there'll be some control. The thieves and rogues will be afraid of the bigger rogue. So the enemies made him the king. So the point is that, yes, here in this world, if somebody is aloof, he's not managing properly, then there is chaos. If there's no good manager anywhere, there's no good manager, there'll be chaos. If the manager does not put his head into everything that's happening, there's problems. But here, just imagine, you know, if the manager of an ISKCON center goes somewhere playing on his flute. Surely there'll be chaos, right? Any doubts? But here we find Krishna is playing on his flute. And yet, Krishna is saying, what's happening? There's creation, annihilation, everything perfectly taking place. Ninth verse. Nachamam tani karmani nibadnanti dananjaya udasinavat asinam asaktam teshu karmasu. O Dhananjay, all this work cannot bind me. So he's saying, I'm doing all this. I'm doing this creation, annihilation, I'm doing all this. But all this work cannot bind me. Don't think that this work binds me. I'm ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. Udasinavat. Again here we find Krishna does not say neutral. He says udasinavat, as though neutral. Again the same concept. Why is he saying as though neutral? Yes. It's not that he's totally neutral. As though neutral. He's in full control, but yet he is neutral. That's why he says as though neutral. Udasinavat. And Prabhupada gives an example to explain this point. So Prabhupada is giving so many analogies actually to explain this, and all these must come in your answer. So Prabhupada is writing. This is the sixth line from the top. Material activities are being carried on by its different potencies. The Lord is always neutral in the material activities of the created world. This neutrality is mentioned here with the word udasinavat. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, note that point. Although he has control over every minute detail of material activities, he is sitting as if neutral. The example can be given of a high court judge sitting on his bench. By his order, so many things are happening. Someone is being hanged. Someone is being put into jail. Someone is awarded a huge amount of wealth. But still he is neutral. He has nothing to do with all that gain and loss. But still again the point remains that, you know, it's a mental example which is not totally explained, because the judge definitely has to break his head over things. Right? He definitely has to sit over there and make so much effort giving the judgments and this and that. Though of course he's not affected by the judgment. But here Krishna is not like that. Krishna is, he is just playing. He's not so much bothered. But everything is happening so perfectly. Similarly, the Lord is always neutral, although he has his hand in every sphere of activity. In the Vedanta Sutra it is stated, Vaishamya Negrinyena. He is not situated in the dualities of this material world. He is transcendental to these dualities. And the 10th verse. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. This material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So once again, the Lord is confirming that how he is in full control of the material nature. And there's another beautiful example to explain this point. I'm reading somewhere in between the purport. So the Lord is not directly attached to this material creation. He simply glances over material nature. Material nature is thus activated and everything is created immediately. Because he glances over material nature, there is undoubtedly activity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But he has nothing to do with the manifestation of the material world directly. This example is given in the Smriti. When there is a fragrance now before someone, the fragrance is touched by the smelling power of the person. Yet the smelling and the flower are detached from one another. The similar connection between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead actually has nothing to do with this material world, but he creates by his glance and audience. In summary, material nature without the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot do anything, yet the Supreme Personality is detached from all material activities. That's a beautiful summary Prabhupada is giving on the whole section. Okay, that is Krishna's achintya, bhed, a bhed relationship with the material world. Yes? Okay, we're coming there. Nityananda.
Regarding the Lord being not attached, a few slides before, the Lord comparing how he dear to the devotee, and the few devotees, he considers them more than himself.
Correct.
Seems to be contradictory. He's not attached, but he's saying he's as good as me, or he's more than me. So how do I understand?
Well, that's not material nature.
Yeah, it said being, all beings are in me, so he's referring to persons here.
Yeah, that's true. But the pure devotees are special. Because they are not under his material energy. They are under his spiritual energy. So they are very dear to him. Okay? Wait. Nityananda Ram Prabhu is in line.
Can you explain both of these two main points? Are the Lord, first the Lord's potency? Is potency meant to be looked at as a personal expansion in the form of a demigod or some of the vast administrative staff that carries on the material world? What is potency?
Potency means energy. So there is material energy, there is spiritual energy. So Krishna is basically controlling all the material activities through his material energy, which is governed by Durga Devi. And there is in the spiritual world, all the spiritual activities, they're governed by the spiritual energy, which is governed by Srimati Radharani.
So potency is not really a personal expansion.
It's basically referring to Shakti, energy.
Yeah,
energy. Yes, second.
Is Durga a jiva or Shakti, or the combination of both, or I understand?
Shakti Tattva.
So she's the same personality all the time. It's not that a different jiva takes the pose like Brahma.
No, it's not like that. It's basically one of the energies of the Lord, Shakti Tattva. There's external energy, internal energy. And the external energy is always represented by Durga Devi. And the internal energy is always represented by Srimati Radharani, and essentially of course Yoga Maya Subhadra. So these are energies of the Lord, Shakti Tattva. So there is Vishnu Tattva, Jiva Tattva, there's Shiva Tattva, and there's Shakti Tattva.
Is Durga Devi the same personality as Maya Devi?
Exactly.
So Maya Devi took initiation from Haridas Thakur?
Yes.
So that Durga Devi also initiated?
Yes. I don't know whether it's a formal initiation or whatever, but anyway, it's a pastime, we understand too. So you know, after all, she's the energy of the Lord. She's just testing Haridas Thakur, right? You had something, huh?
Yeah, you were mentioning that. So this concept. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. Not only in the material world. Is that the right understanding? If that, so you mentioned that concept is not there in the spiritual world. So was asking a few devotees, they don't, they belong to the spiritual energy. That means this particular shloka that they came across.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it's essentially, as you saw in the title of the section, it is Krishna's achintya bheda relationship with the material world. We're talking about his relationship with material world. And regarding his relationship with the spiritual world, Krishna is very soon going to explain that. Right? With his pure devotees. Huh.
Regarding, again, to relate to Durga Devi, the material man is the same, that's prakriti. So does it include the sun, moon, earth, water, fire, air, everything?
Everything.
So then every thing is again controlled by a demigod, like
Surya Dev, Chandra, Vayu, Agni, like that. So it's mentioned in one of the earlier purports that these administrative gods come under Indra.
Okay.
And then Vishnu is the supreme of all the
okay.
of the other gods. So okay. that is Maya Devi Kritan, right? Because we see that she has got a Trishul and she controls and she gives Adiyasmik, Adibodhik, Adidari pleasure, which I'm a bit confused about that.
So basically she is controlling Prakriti. Prakriti means Bhumi Rapo Nalo Vayu Kam Mano Budhirech. That's what's material. So she's basically controlling that. And she's controlling those living entities who are trying to manipulate earth, water, fire, air and ether for their enjoyments. That's a jurisdiction.
So the demigods like Surya don't come under Maya
Devi? No. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu, in previous text, you said the Atlas holding the globe and it looked like tired.
Yes, very tired.
So what is holding all the planets?
Somebody would like to answer that question? What's holding all the planets?
Krishna.
Yes, that's right. Lord. Yes, the scientists may say it's gravitational force or whatever, but ultimately it's all being governed by Krishna. And yes, it's that the hoods of Anantashesh are the resting places of all the universes. They're all resting on Anantashesh's hoods. Yes, Nana?
There in the ninth chapter, I entered to each planet and...
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right. It's there. It's coming. It's coming very soon in this chapter.
Is there a description of what makes the planet spin?
Krishna. Krishna is in full control. Okay, fine. So that was this section, and I know we have only 10 minutes remaining, but we are practically one day behind time. But don't worry. Krishna is in control of time. Okay, these are some similarities between the 7th and 9th chapter. Something of academic interest. Okay, fine. Michael Brook, can you please quickly go to the next? Okay, so now the next section, 9.11 to 25, which is entitled 11 to 15, sorry, 11 to 15 is non-worshippers and worshippers. Okay, so it's a small section of about 4 or 5 verses, which is again, which has already been covered, so we just want to finish this section. So this is a summary of this section. So the question is asked, considering his Yoga Maheshwaram, why does everyone respect Krishna? He's a supreme person. Right? So Krishna is speaking about his Yoga Maheshwaram, his inconceivable potencies. And if Krishna is so great, why doesn't everyone surrender to him? No, there are different categories of people. Okay, so the 10th verse speaks... No, sorry, not 10. That's just, what you say?
Bullet point?
Yeah, bullet point, exactly. So the 11th and the 12th verses refer to the impersonalists, 13th and the 14th verses refer to the pure devotees, the Mahatmas, and 16th to 19th verses is referring to the worshippers of the Vishwaroop, and 20-25 is referring to the demigod worshippers. Okay, so that's how there is a section from 11 to 25, that's a summary of this section. Huh? Oh, the 15th verse is missing. The 15th verse is encapsulating the others, actually. The 15th verse, it speaks about all of them. The 15th verse speaks about the impersonalness. Yeah. Ekatvena prithaktvena bahudha vishvatom mukham. It refers to the impersonalness, it refers to the worshippers of the Vishwarupa, and it refers to the demigod worshippers. The 15th verse is, it gives a sort of a summary of these three. Okay, I think so. The body language shows that everyone is tired, and we are, and so we are, because of some intense philosophical dose. So, any other comments or questions? I think so. That's a good summary of the whole section, and we will elaborate that a little more tomorrow. Anything else somebody wants to say?
Talking about the space and the sky element, how is the sky element present in our body?
Yeah, all the hollow spaces, that's exactly.
Okay, then the sky that I see outside, the blue sky.
Yes.
Now, what is that made of? Is that like an element by itself?
Ether.
So what is that ether?
What is the ether?
I'm difficulty understanding that. Is that the space? Now here in the room we have space. So we say that if the room is filled with people, there is no space. Is that the same as we need that same sky there, the which I see there, is that the same as the space?
So, yes. So the sky that you see there, it's supposed to be blue. Yes, currently, it's not blue, but it's supposed to be blue. And Prabhupada said the sky is blue because Krishna is blue. You know, I don't know which chapter that comes, but actually, I have a slide where I have that Prabhupada's quote, where Prabhupada is saying that the sky is blue because Krishna is blue, because what we see is basically a reflection of the Brahma Jyoti. So the Brahma Jyoti is coming from Krishna, which is blue, and therefore the sky is blue. Okay. So that's what we can, as a sky, what we see is the outer space, which is which actually extends for you know, for many miles. Right? It's not something which is close, you know. It's extending many miles.
It's infinite.
Yeah, it's infinite, exactly. Yeah, it's almost infinite. Because this is what extends all the way, you know, to, you know, all the heavenly planets. Right? So, and whatever is there under that is space. That's the ether, right? And so, if what happens when there is overcrowding is basically there is suffocation, because then there is less oxygen. That's another thing, right? When there are too many people in a room, if there is no proper ventilation, then there's less oxygen, and then that's the reason why people feel suffocated, because of less oxygen, more carbon dioxide. Okay, fine. We stop over there. Prabhu, you have any announcements or something? Okay, let me end, then you can make. Shri Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhagavad Gita ki, Samoye Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki, Sahaja Premande. So tonight, if we can read the remaining verses of the 9th chapter, and we'll try and finish the 9th chapter tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Hey Michael, you're fired. Same time tomorrow class?